Rick Mahn is locked and loaded on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Yes, it's Thursday, the 18th of April, 2024. This is TNT. I'm Rick Mahn, locked and loaded, and still plenty more to come before the end of my shift here, which will finish at 1 p.m. sharp UK time. You can recalibrate your clocks wherever you're listening in from. But anyway, we've got another 55 minutes. I'm going to be talking to Gemma Cooper in just a minute, our news correspondent, about today's breaking stories. I have two more guests to bring to you, to present to you before the end of the show. Robin Tilbrook, he is the leader and chairman of the English Democrats and also chairman of the Workers of England Union. He's a solicitor. We're going to be talking about elections and UK politics in just a minute. And then Parallel Mike will be joining me from Poland towards the end of the hour, talking about what's happening in the world's economic fronts. He and I like to chew the fat about that. And also, of course, what's happening in his part of Europe, because sometimes that's very much overlooked. We tend to focus on the UK and Ireland and America and Australia, but there's an awful lot going on in France and Germany and Spain and Italy and Poland and Hungary at the minute too. Massive, massive amounts of people moving around over there. Massive economic and political upheaval. So we're going to get Mike's input on what's happening in his literal backyard in Poland to round off the show today. You can leave us a message on our live chat, tntradio.live. If you're new to the station or you've just happened upon us here this morning, there's a little community on there that's growing and it's very vibrant and very interesting indeed. If you happen upon it, just go onto our homepage, scroll down towards the bottom. There's a little live chat button. Hit that. And if you want to contribute, you can simply read the comments and follow them along, or you can contribute and make yourself an account and do that. You can also leave me a message, an email address, if you want to do that. Sorry, not an email address. My email address is rickmahn@tntradio.live. Thoughts, opinions, comments, suggestions, etc. Throw them my way. And for anyone that has emailed me in the last few days, I have read the messages, but I tend to do it really late at night and I'm really lazy. I always say I'll reply to that in the morning and I inevitably don't. So I have to apologize for my tardiness and my procrastination. So messages have been received and welcome. Thank you very much for all the people that have taken the time to do that. Quick shout out to Dave, Biology Phenom, on the X/Twitter platform. He is tirelessly bringing us updates on the Scottish COVID inquiry. The latest is here from Adam Strakura from Age Scotland. He was testifying yesterday. He said panic calls in the first wave. Social care packages for the elderly stopped overnight. I'm quoting him yesterday at the inquiry. They didn't have any food. They were running low on medication. They were isolated. And I am very sure that this resulted in excess deaths of the elderly in Scotland. Rustler picks up on this video that Dave posted up, said severe consequences of lockdown in the elderly. Number one, no food. Number two, no medicine. Number three, no GP access. Number four, fear. Number five, isolation. Number six, mental health harms. Number seven, panic. And number eight, excess deaths. The impact of lockdown on the elderly and frail was horrific, and no doubt caused many avoidable deaths. And that's the crunch. People die. People die. People make mistakes, yes, but there's a lot of avoidable deaths that could have been avoided had proper procedures been followed, or non-proper procedures hadn't been followed in the case of the elderly in Scotland. And also, it's worth noting here, Rustler, that's a good account if you don't use it on Twitter, at TheRustler83, excess deaths in Scotland during the lockdown were running at 4,000. Excess deaths, that's 30% above average. And people scratch their heads and say, well, why? Why is this happening? Why is that happening? Government incompetence and government wickedness combined to cause this. And people say, oh, it was they weren't very good. They knew what they were doing. And when I say incompetence, I mean they were fully understanding of what these implications would have been, and yet they piled on and did it anyway. There is no excuse, in my humble opinion. The fault of all of this, all of these things that we talk about here, forget about boats, forget about people, it's the government. It is our respective governments are ultimately responsible for all the woes that we are currently suffering at the minute. It doesn't matter if you're in Australia, it doesn't matter if you're in Ireland, it doesn't matter if you're in Scotland, it doesn't matter Wales or France or Italy or Germany or Russia or Poland or China or Argentina or Mexico, on and on and on and on it goes. The government, the government, the government, the government, the government. Every country, the government is to blame. And that is it. That is my executive summary on it, like it or not. And if you're listening to me from the government now, stick it up your ass because it's the truth and you damn well know it. Anyway, hopefully everybody's having a lovely day. And I'm going to try and introduce a little balance back into the show this morning with the wonderful Gemma Cooper. Don't go away. She's braced herself, steadied herself. She's ready to jump into the fray here on TNT, today's news talk.
Bringing you a world view.
I like to hear what's going on around the world.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Gemma, I'm going to have to cut the cappuccinos out again in the morning. I've been running on no caffeine for 6 months or a year, and all of a sudden a little taste of the old espresso in the morning, and I'm all over the place.
Oh, I don't know. I think you stuck it to the man pretty well there, Rick, actually. You know, you didn't mince your words. I was laughing my head off backstage before coming on in studio to your very succinct analysis of what our governments can go and do. If only it was just the government, you know, in any single country. The trouble is, it's all the nefarious, shadowy, non-governmental organizations behind our governments. I mean, the age-old saying is if you can see them, they're not really in control at all. They hold no power. Yeah. They're being told what to do. And they're little puppets, as we talked about at the last hour, you know, dangling on a string. And the globalist masters at the top. And who are they? We'll never know. That's the whole point, isn't it? We'll never really, really know. We think we know. It's the WEF and the WHO. We think we know. I doubt it's even them. I doubt many people in the chat or listening or watching and whatever you think. I doubt many people switched on enough to be listening to TNT think we even know anything about who's really in charge of us and how far up this food chain it actually goes. But, you know, sticking it to the government is a start, isn't it? It's a start in the right direction.
They're the focal point, Gem, I suppose you could say. I'm fully aware that the like of Joe Biden or the like of Rishi Sunak or the like of Frank Spencer, or should I say Simon Harris, those people aren't in charge of jack. They're just simply good little puppets. They're little marionettes. Then somebody's attached to their strings and jerking their limbs and opening their mouths and closing them. But I suppose what I'm trying to say is they're the focal point. And if you flesh it out too, and this is a tough one too, the people, the masses within the countries under those said respective governments too, because of mass compliance, we're in this position too. Whereas mass non-compliance would have meant we didn't maybe get this far down the road again. But again, what can you do? I suppose it's just a little outburst. And I'm looking at the biggest, easiest target that I can find, the target, which in this case is the government in air quotes. So yeah, you get what I'm saying. But I don't know. I just feel like some days, you know, I don't know if you feel like this, but some days I wake up and I just want to slap someone. Okay. And metaphorically speaking, of course, I would never indulge in physical violence of any description to any human being. But I'm talking metaphorically, you know, I just feel the world's governments need a big old slap. It would make me feel good if I could do that or see it happen.
Well, let's see. I mean, we do have elections coming up in the UK this year. Obviously, we've got the American elections. Maybe it will be a long-awaited opportunity at the ballot box post-2020 for people to indulge in a metaphorical slap. Because, I mean, we've covered on TNT in the UK, for example, how many new political parties basically staffed by members of what we would call the freedom movement or truthers, alternative community, they've sprung up. Now, maybe they won't win, but they're there. They're there putting a new voice into campaigning issues. They're there, you know, on hustings, which are official election, viewpoints, giving a different view. Maybe that won't change anything overnight, but it's a start. It's certainly a start here in the UK. It'd be interesting to see if similar grassroots political parties have sprung up in America as we hurtle towards November. I don't think there's any doubt Trump's going to win, but let's see if there are other kind of more outspoken alternative groups that maybe garner a few votes at the ballot box. Let's see if change is afoot there. We never know. Never know.
The TNT party, it could be time, Gemma. It could be time. But time is something we don't have an awful lot of here. So let's maximize it in terms of our exposure to headlines. We touched on a few in the last hour. We're going to go into any more detail in them. Are you anything else to add before we delve into some of those stories?
Well, the Tory MP being suspended for misuse of campaign funds, that is an extraordinary headline because allegedly Mark Mingus from the northwest of England, who's been suspended now, so he's effectively not a Conservative MP while these investigations are being carried out. Allegedly, he phoned his campaign manager last December and said, can you give me £5,000? I'm being held by some, quote, bad people in a flat somewhere and they won't let me go. Very odd that the campaign manager said, oh, OK, we'll find the money. Interesting story. There other money apparently has been asked for from Mark Mingus. He denies all the allegations. But also what's broken in the last hour, this is Rwanda again, Rick. I'm sorry to keep bringing this, but obviously this was the week that they hoped that the bill would pass through the House of Commons. So the Defence Secretary, Grant Shapps, he's refused to rule out when quizzed on whether he would use Royal Air Force planes, which we pay for, the taxpayer, to deport asylum seekers to Rwanda. He hasn't ruled it out. He said that ministers in government we'll do whatever we need now to ensure the flights take off. It's a whole government effort involving every single department. It smacks of desperation to be using RAF planes to deport the asylum seekers. And as we discussed in the last hour, it's a significant story just to have broken in this morning. It's about Scotland. And after the CAS review, which was published last week into treatment of children in the NHS to do with gender identity and practices, puberty blockers in Scotland's only under 18s gender clinic are to be banned, same as in England, and that is following the CAS review, which is great news because there have been other revelations today that primary schools in Scotland are using children in the primary schools of primary school age to be ambassadors for the LGBTQ agenda, which is very shocking news indeed. That's all part of the efforts of a charity in Scotland which got £1 million of taxpayers' money to implement that policy. So, you know, conflicting things going on there, but at least puberty blockers in that gender clinic in Scotland have now been banned.
Can you imagine, you know, back in the day when we were at school, you went to school and generally speaking, if you got there early, you ran around the playground, you might have played tag or British Bulldog or maybe football. You went into your class, you know, you learned how to read and write and count. In some people's cases, some people didn't really even learn that, but they were there anyway. Then at break time, you got a little bottle of milk. Used to be free milk at school, a little bottle of milk and a little straw. Then you'd learn some more. Then you went out at lunchtime and you ate your sandwiches and then you kicked ball about and then, you know, you dragged your way through the afternoon and then you went home. That was school back then. Maybe had a fight outside the school gates, you know, if you were a little bit rough and ready. These things happened or smoked behind the bike sheds if you were a little bit of a rebel back in the day. Those would have been extreme acts in school. Can you have imagined what it would have been like when you were 5, 6, 7 years of age, one of your classmates coming up to you with a rainbow t-shirt on saying, I'm actually a boy. I'm actually a girl. Gemma, I think you're a boy and I think I'm an ambassador now. I'm going to try and convert you and get you to a clinic and they're going to inject you and mutilate your body. Can you believe we've sank to that level that they're actually using children now to be ambassadors to try and convince other children? Sponges, little sponges that'll soak up just about anything you put their way towards this LGBTQIA+2P nonsense. I mean, I must admit, it makes me feel a little bit of despair when I hear that, but I'm pretty sure that that can't and won't bed, and I'm hoping something happens to nip that one in the bud.
Well, it's certainly not going down well, mainly because the charity that's been implementing that, it's not necessarily a government policy, but somebody in government has signed this off. The charity got, it was LGBT Youth Scotland, £1 million. And the charity was also encouraging schools, primary schools, to build gender neutral toilets and mark Transgender Day of Remembrance. And part of this, the LGBT Youth Scotland, they were setting up gender and sexual orientation alliance groups for students as part of membership. And it's the money really that was given. I mean, £1 million is a lot for Scotland to be handing over. And also the issue of primary school age. Like you say, that there's such young children and the issue of even consent. I mean, where does that come into this at all? Luckily, it's been offset by the headline that's broken in the last couple of hours about the only clinic for under 18s gender clinic has banned the use of puberty blockers. following the cast review. So at least some common sense there. I don't think they really had a lot of choice, given that that's already happened in England and Wales. And the cast review was so scathing, saying there's no evidence for children questioning gender identity. There's certainly no evidence for puberty blocking drugs. And that was a 4-year report, you know, of very great detail. We talked about it last week. But it is shocking to see that headline of primary school children quizzing other primary school children. Because, of course, you are more likely as a child to listen to your peers, aren't you? The teacher is this kind of nebulous force at the top of the class, and school is all a bit scary and frightening at that age. So you cling to your peers for reassurance. So quite how they're recruiting these young ambassadors to quiz their fellow classmates about their sexual orientation at such a young age, I don't know. And I think that is part of the concern here people from this charity going into schools and really imposing their ideologies onto young children and spending a considerable amount of taxpayers' money to do it. Hopefully this is the end of it. Now these headlines are making their way into the public consciousness and we won't see them again. But it is Scotland. Only on a few weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, it introduced the hate crime law. It's Scotland. It seems to be going madder by the day, doesn't it? Under Hamza Youssef's reign.
And they're bumping off the elderly hand over fist, or we're doing during the COVID years. You know, Scotland, you're a Scot up there, watch your back. That's all I'm saying. Whether it be in a primary school, whether it be in a nursing home, whether it be online, you've got to watch your back if you're a Scot these days. Gemma, thank you so much for all those insights and headlines that you brought to us today. We will talk again tomorrow, all being well. And I am bracing myself and getting ready for my first conversation with Robin Tilbrook. He's on his way into TNT Towers as we speak. Don't go away. We will be right back after this short break.
TNT's Blender.
Money is a problem for you. Does that make you into a communist?
Not at all, not at all. It's just the way that money is brought into circulation. You know, most people don't understand that concept. We live in a debt-based fiat economy. And the way that money is brought into circulation is basically out of thin air. You know, you go to the bank, you ask for a loan, a mortgage or something. The bank doesn't hold those funds within their vaults, whatever you want to call it, and then they literally press a button and that money gets brought into circulation through thin air through the Bank of England. They're given to that person, and then that person has to pay that money back with interest on top. So that whole concept of the way money is brought into circulation, it is a form of control.
Flip it. Open. And today's news talk, TNT.
A better business tip from TNT Radio. The benefits of advertising on today's news talk, TNT Radio, should be clear to businesses of any shape or size. It can be accessed anywhere, anytime, by anybody, and is the perfect way to build brand awareness and stimulate digital activity. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
At the top of the hour, we'll keep on top of the news.
It's the most important thing we can do.
On today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Yes, TNT, today's news talk, dynamite to some people, and that's what we try and deliver, some journalistic dynamite here this morning. And to light the fuse of today's journalistic truth bombs, we have none other than Robin Tilbrook joining me, at least on Locked and Loaded, for the first time. Robin is, in his own words, an English nationalist. He's campaigning for England and English independence. He's an English Democrat, chairman of the English Democratic Party. He's also a solicitor. And I would dare say concerned, a seriously concerned man about the trajectory and the velocity of which our country is going when it comes to moving ever closer to the abyss. At least that's what my take on it is anyway. Robin, welcome to Locked and Loaded on TNT this morning. How are you doing?
Thank you, Rick. Thanks for having me on. I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm good. I'm not going to lie. I'm a little bit fired up this morning. It doesn't really matter anymore if you're an Englishman or a Scotchman or a Welshman or an Irishman. as we cast our eyes around our respective countries, Robin, I think we're seeing the same thing. We're seeing politicians that are facilitating the destruction of our society in many, many ways. We're seeing failed health services, something that's close to your heart at the minute. Faith in the police, for example, is, I believe, disintegrating by the day and by the week. That's something that you want to address, I believe, running as a position of a police commissioner. Is that correct?
That's right, Rick. So I'm standing as in the elections for police commissioner for Essex, where I live. Basically, the Essex Police, and it's also linked with the fire service as well. So the full title of the role is police, crime, fire commissioner. And basically, I attended the briefing given by the chief fire officer and the chief constable a couple of weeks ago. Quite interesting. It was exactly what I expected, of course, but it was quite interesting that they basically confirmed what they were interested in and what they were trying to achieve was diversity, multiculturalism, changing the culture. They were very proud of their diversity hires. The chief fire officer is keen to have at least 50% of the fire brigade women. So we could well wind up with a situation where you're in a fire and the person who's trying to rescue you is a woman who wouldn't be able to carry you down the ladder, I don't suppose. Some women would, but I don't think they're recruiting on the basis of anything, any skills or aptitude to do the job. They're recruiting simply on the basis of tick-boxing multiculturalist criteria and changing the culture.
Is that not the one of the biggest problems that we face at the minute, Robin, right across the board? In Northern Ireland, for example, something that you want to focus on in your bid to become the police commissioner is to prioritise catching actual criminals like burglars and muggers, focus on protecting us from people like that, ensure budgets are spent on frontline policing, not on politically correct projects, increasing visibility, addressing the fear and causes of crime, scrapping diversity targets. Is it a fair statement to say that funding is not necessarily an issue when it comes to the National Health Service or the police service? It's squandering and wasting funds that are available and resources that are available doing mad things, not being good custodians of the people in which you're supposed to be managing and the funds that you've been given to manage. It's not really a funding issue, it's a management issue.
Absolutely right, Rick. Of course, with the police commissioners, they are elected. The current police commissioner has now done his second term as police commissioner. He's notionally a conservative. The previous one was also conservative. They've worked consistently to change the culture, to change the type of people that are working there. I mean, in effect, they're discriminating against white, male, English, possibly Christian, heterosexuals. They don't really want to appoint them. We actually had a case up in Cheshire Police a couple of years ago where one of the white English heterosexual males came top of all the selection tests that they did to recruit him to recruit police officers for Cheshire Police, came top. And they didn't appoint him because they wanted to appoint black minority ethnic, LGBTQ+, people instead. He actually did something that's quite unusual, unfortunately. People ought to do it much more often when faced with this sort of thing. He sued, and he won. He won quite a lot of money off the Cheshire Police for discrimination, because it's obviously discrimination when you think about it. To not appoint the top person in the selection board, and instead to appoint people who did much worse, who you're doing it simply on the basis of discrimination.
Yeah. It's crazy to think that we're having a conversation like this in the year 2024. I'm sure if you rewind time back to the 70s or back to the 1980s, and we said, imagine looking into the future, this is what the future is going to look like. People will no longer be recruited based on their ability to do a job, but rather the ability to tick certain boxes that illustrate that they're from a diverse type of background. But yet, here we are talking about it today in 2024. We've got to take a little headline break now, just for 30 seconds. But when we come back at the other side, let's explore the importance of meritocracy, the importance of actually getting a job based on your ability to do it, irrespective of your skin color, your sexual orientation, your ethnic background. Personally, listen, if every cop in the UK was a black woman lesbian, I wouldn't have an issue with it if they could do the job the best, okay? Let the best man or woman get the job. But that ain't going to be the case. And by the same token, not every cop should be a white, Christian, straight male, because they're not all going to be able to do the job. But the job's allocation should be based on merit and merit alone, irrespective of the gender, orientation or skin color of the applicants. But unfortunately, Robin, that's not what we're seeing at the minute. So let's look at that when we come back at the other side here on TNT, Today's News Talk.
TNT Radio News.
Are you ready for some awesome news?
Yes. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Matt Boyland here with your TNT headlines. Beijing has hit out at Australia after Canberra announced it was injecting an extra $50 billion into its armed forces over the next 10 years to help counteract China in the Indo-Pacific.
China firmly opposes this. We hope that Australia will correctly understand China's development and strategic intentions.
And Washington has reportedly agreed to spare WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange the death penalty if he is extradited to the US on espionage charges.
Are you enjoying listening to TNT Radio?
Do you think we're doing a good job?
Then please let us know. Why not leave us a like or a positive review or comment on Facebook, Gab, or Getter? Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Okay, I'm just going to throw this one straight at you, okay? You know, we're talking about the lack of meritocracy. We're talking about the lack of common sense when it comes to these appointments and the deluge of wokeism and, you know, diverse training that's going on in all these organizations. Who do we blame for this? There's got to be somebody who's at fault for this. Who do we point the finger of blame at this morning?
So whilst Blair and his government started the process, really, it's been the Conservatives who have been the driver behind this. They've now been in power. They're getting on for 15 years. They've been pushing this all across the board. So far as the police are concerned, so far as the fire brigade are concerned, all the commissioners have been on the same side. They've been on the side of pushing diversity hires, multiculturalism, and so on. They've not been in favour of doing the job. And making sure that the job is done properly. And it's not just in the police, it's right across the whole British state. Just to give you an example, our judges are now appointed on the basis of, they won't even consider an application until they've proved a lifetime's commitment to equality and diversity.
And that's from the judiciary. That's right up at the top levels of the judiciary. Now, again, they're not immune from the box-ticking exercises either. And again, I can't emphasize this enough. I have no issue with the best person, the best man or the best woman getting a job. My issue is that the best man or best woman may not get the job because they don't fit a certain demographic. Now, in Northern Ireland, for example, for a long, long time, the current police service of Northern Ireland, or the police here, was formerly known as the RUC. And there was a lot of legacy baggage along with that organization. A lot of good people worked for it, a lot of not so good people worked for it. But now the requirements are that as much as possible, we have a 50-50 split in recruitments for the RUC, which is 50% from the Protestant community and 50% from the Republican or Nationalist community. Now, the issue is that there's a lot of Republicans and Nationalists don't want to join the RUC. So if we're short in numbers and we get, you know, 50 really good candidates from the Protestant background, they can't recruit them because they say, well, you're going to skew it past that 50-50 balance. So we've seen that happening over here in Northern Ireland for a very, very long time. And that was just along the basis of religious background. But now we have that extrapolated. It's not just religion, but it's sexual orientation and skin color. And now even age and some cases as well. The Irish police force in the Republic, they're having a real time keeping recruits in the Gardaí or the An Garda Síochána. So they're now saying, well, if you're over 50, you can join us, a new recruit to the police force. And I'm not an ageist. I'm 50 years of age. Some days I can barely bend over and tie my own shoelaces, Robin. I wouldn't be a great candidate for the police. And I'm just talking about me personally. It's gone a little bit mad, hasn't it?
It definitely has. I live out in a country area, and we had some travellers come around on quad bikes with guns to shoot the hares and pheasants and so on, basically poaching.
Yep.
Much to my surprise, the local farmer who complained, the local activist who complained, actually managed to get the police to come out, and they turned up. About 2 hours later, so obviously too late, and they turned up in a smart car in the middle of winter to go across a muddy field, right? No chance. And the two police officers that got out of this smart car was a very slight, gentle-looking woman. No chance of her taking on an armed traveller. And the other police officer was not very tall, but he was very chubby, shall we say. So he wouldn't have been able to run across any distance across a ploughed muddy field.
Yeah.
So, you know, basically what we got there was a good example of the police not providing anything that would be remotely useful in dealing with the problem. You know, the people who turn up, they got no chance of dealing with it. And the equipment they'd come with was completely hopeless. And of course, the smart car would be, at the time, very much the top level of what people were trying to say about net zero and so on. So, I mean, it was a good example of it all being tick box and not at all about doing the job.
I have a story very briefly that the last place I used to live in, I've moved house, but there was someone a few doors down. Let's just say they engaged in a lot of illegal activities, right? And one day there was a raid happened to their house. The police came out en masse and raided the house. There must have been four squad cars came out in this little street. Must have been, you know, 16 cops, at least 16 cops, all after this one guy. And I saw this guy very subtly walk out the front door of the house because I was upstairs looking down along the street. And he very subtly walked behind one of the police vans and then took off in a sprint. And I'm not gonna lie, I was blown away by this guy's athleticism. He ran like a hare, and he vaulted over fences like a gazelle. Needless to say, the police that were chasing him didn't have a mission. Most of them were very unfit, let me just say, and incapable of following him. Then the follow-up was done door to door. And when they came and knocked my door and came down and I opened the door, there was a very slim male police officer there with beautiful makeup on. He had his mascara on and his lip gloss on and his hair tied back in a beautiful long ponytail. And all I could think of myself was, listen, each to their own. If he's the best guy for the job, well and good. But I remember back in the day, Robin, to join the cops, you had to be at least 6 foot tall and you had to be fit and able to handle yourself because, you know, you had to be dealing with people on the front lines, frontline policing. But all that's gone out the window now. And I think there's been a real erosion of trust because we've seen a lot of two-tier policing over the last few years as well. Because people are literally looking around, seeing things that you've just described and I've just described, is it fair to say that there's a massive drop-off in trust in the police? And if so, is it recoverable, do you think? Is it possible to recover that back again?
Well, certainly if I'm elected for Essex Police, I will try to do that because I will be refocusing them on actually catching criminals rather than some sort of diversity criteria. And I'll be focusing them on protection of the public and people going about their lawful affairs. At the moment, they are much more inclined to get involved in political type things. So they investigate anybody's comments online. They're, because obviously you're not then dealing with some nasty person who might fight them if you go and arrest this person. Also, they tend to be focused on all the things that are easy to do and don't involve much in the way of physical exercise. I wouldn't want to overstress that, because sometimes the police do a very good job. But it tends to be much less than we, the general public, expect. I mean, just to give you a for instance, last time I was standing about 3 years ago, we had a burglar come up for sentencing. And this guy, who was not much more than about 20, he was from the traveller community near Basildon at the time. And he was being sentenced for 40-plus burglaries. And he then asked for over 300 to be taken into account as part of the sentencing process. And this was the first time he went to prison. And he went to prison only for a ridiculously tiny amount of time, like 6 weeks. And basically that was a sentence for nearly 400 burglaries.
The fact that that's actually happening now is ludicrous. We're out of time here, but you see, as I'm talking to you about this particular topic, I don't know if you can remember, the 80s were a great time for adverts on TV, for product adverts. And there used to be an ad for Kit Kats, you know, Kit Kat chocolate bars, okay? I don't know if you can remember this one or not, but there was one where there was a record company were signing up a new band, and there were these young kids. And when they came in to meet the executives of the record company, they looked them up and down and they said, "You can't sing, you can't play your instruments, and you look awful." And then there was a silence, and then they said, "You guys are going to go a long way." So in other words, you're completely incompetent, but you're going to do really, really well. That's what I'm seeing when I'm having this conversation with you this morning. The more incompetent and inept and unfit and, you know, incompatible you are with the job, it seems to be.
As long as they tick box some multiculturalist criteria, in which case they can't be touched.
They'll go a long way. So it reminds me of the Kit Kat advertising from back in the 80s. So Robin, we're out of time at the minute. Please check out Robin's blogspot website at robintilbrook tilbrook.blogspot.com, and also follow him on the extra Twitter platform at Robin Tilbrook, and he's also the chairman of the English Democrats Party. You can catch them on X and Twitter as well. Thank you so much. It's been an absolute blast talking to you, and hopefully we'll stay up to speed with your attempts to be elected into that commission role. And I hope, for the sake of Essex, that you're successful on there, and no doubt you'll keep us informed. So thank you so much, Robin. I've got to take a break right now, and I welcome Parallel Mike on from Poland. So don't go away. Stay tuned for more here on TNT, Today's News Talk.
My baby's back from the West Coast.
Hear those pictures that you asked for your school project? First day of school, cute as a button.
So long ago.
Oh, here's Grandma Florence after that flood wiped out the whole neighborhood.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here.
I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe. And it's the best way to protect that legacy.
Those beans smell heavenly.
Give Mom a little credit.
You know what? We should make an emergency communication plan. That way we're ready this year.
Oh, great
idea. At my dorm, we have emergency kits for earthquakes and wildfires, but I'm sure there's something more local I can send you with the link.
Okay.
Smart.
I'm coming to share with you guys.
Protect your legacy. Plan for natural disasters today. Visit ready.gov/plan.
Many pollution sources can affect the air you breathe, from power plants and vehicles to dust and wildfires. Knowing more about local air quality can help you protect your health. If you're thinking about buying an air sensor, EPA has a series of videos to help you get the most out of it. Learn how EPA collects and uses regulatory data, how EPA communicates health messaging, and how to interpret the readings from your sensor. Visit epa.gov/air-sensor-toolbox.
You're with Rick Munn on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Yes, without any further ado, let me welcome back to the show my good friend from over in Poland, none other than Parallel Mike. If you're not familiar with Parallel Mike, then shame on you. Get yourself educated, get yourself enlightened. Check him out on Twitter or X at @parallel_Mike, or more importantly, check out his website, parallelmike.com. Get on there, see what he's about, and show him some love and some support. Mike, how the hell are you doing today?
Yeah, thanks for having me back on the show, Rick. We're good over here. The weather's pretty nice. I just went for a good run in the forest. So, yeah, fighting fit.
Good man. Good man. And you know what? The last time you were on, if memory serves me correctly, we were discussing the dreaded B word. Yes, the Bitcoin word. And boy, oh boy, you got a lot of flack after your last appearance here in TNT for simply telling people, you know, proceed with caution. Do your research. Think twice before piling into something with both feet. Who would have thought that would have elicited such a negative reaction from the old Bitcoin fanatics out there, Mike?
Oh, it did, Rick. I actually had people unsubscribe from my content even on my YouTube channel. So you owe me a few subscribers. You're going to have to send some people my way. But yeah, you know, I think what we discussed actually was risk management, wasn't it? It was a case of, you know, throughout history, there's so many times when we see new things come, new things go. We see things go up thousands of percent. We see them come back down thousands of percent. That's just life. It's cycles. You know, nothing goes up in a straight line and nothing goes up forever. So I think when the narrative gets too hyperbolic, you just have to have a sense of a modicum of sensibility where you just say, listen, maybe it's going a little bit too fast. Maybe it's not going to be quite so easy as we just buy something and we all get rich. You know, you can't have 8 billion Lamborghinis on planet Earth, Rick. Not everyone can have a Lambo or a mansion or a private island. So we all have to take risk management into consideration. And I think, you know, looking at what's happened the past month, yeah, it could have gone up another 20 grand, but it didn't. It went back down 10 grand. And if you bought in 10 grand higher, it probably doesn't feel too good right now. And of course, you can always say to yourself, well, it'll go back up, but sometimes they don't go back up. So you got to be prepared for all scenarios, my friend.
You do. And, you know, hindsight's a great thing, Mike, especially when it comes to investments. People with the benefit of hindsight would have done this, would have done that. And that's why we're trying to do here is, and, you know, ironically, I had to laugh when you said about losing subscribers. You know, one of the reasons why I try and get you on here is to try and give you a little bit more exposure so people can come and follow you, support you. Look, it's working in reverse. It's actually costing you money now every time you come on TNT instead of getting you some followers. But hey, you know, what is it they say? It's better to be hated for who you are than to be loved for what you are not. And you're simply trying to urge a little bit of critical thinking before anybody embarks in anything. Now, I know you're not a massive fan of the old Bitcoin. I must admit, I'm not either. But that's not to say that I'm against it. If you're into it and you research it and you think it's the way forward, then you crack on and you fill your boots. I would lean more towards your investment philosophy, which is towards more tangible things such as precious metals. And again, with the benefit of hindsight, after our last conversation, you know, you've always been a big advocate of gold. I remember you telling me you've got a little gold bracelet on that if you're pushed and push comes to shove, you know, you can use that to trade. You can use that to barter if everything collapses. Gold has done a little bit of a blinder since the last time we spoke as well. Who would have thought that you were advocating for that and it's gone well? In fact, to quote you, it says, with gold going from being a marathon runner to a sprinter, that's even since the last time we talked. Maybe you're onto something there.
Yeah, it kind of did that in the 1970s as well, Rick, which is similar to what we've got today, this stagflation where we've got no growth. It cost them $1.50 to get 50 cents worth of growth. And we've got huge debt levels, which we didn't have in the 70s. So that's a big red flag that we could be going towards an end game here. And the currencies are devaluing so fast. And even with their official dodgy CPI numbers, you're talking 10%. But we know it's more like 30% inflation. Once you get to that 50% level, that's game over for the currency, Rick. You're almost certainly going towards hyperinflation at that point. Now, people might say, Mike, 50%, that's a huge number. But it's the doubling time you have to think about with inflation. We went from 1% to 2%, 2% to 4%, 4% to 8%, 8% to 16%. And like I said, we was actually towards 25%. Once you're at 25%, it's only one more double. And that's what you need to think of with inflation. It's the rate of change. So we're getting very close to the end game. And on the other side of the end game, all of the financialized assets, they all get revalued against what, Rick? Against real money, gold. So that's what you're playing for with gold, is the understanding that throughout history, you always have the system at some point fall apart because of the debt. And that's where we are now. So it's amazing to live through. And I'm not surprised gold's going up. I'm not surprised we're seeing this play out. I was talking about this a long time ago. Not trying to pat myself on the back. I'm just saying, if you look back throughout history, this happens every time. And you'll always get the people saying this time is different. But I actually don't hear many of those people today, which is even scarier, I think. So yeah, it is going to go up, Rick. It's going to continue right until the end. It won't be a straight line, and you will see other things come and go. Maybe Bitcoin survives the end game, but maybe it doesn't. So I just say, yeah, hedge accordingly, and also think about history. You know, there's thousands of years of history that you can, you know, go back and read through, and I can suggest some books if anyone wants to. In fact, I just shared a book. I did a 5-part series on my YouTube show called The 5 Laws of Gold, which was looking back at a book that was written in the 1920s. And guess what? Every single piece of advice, every single one of those laws of gold is as relevant today as it was back in 1920. And that shows you that time-tested history and wisdom.
And there's also a reason, Mike, why gold has been going around in circulation, has been used as a tool for trading and wealth calibration for thousands upon thousands upon thousands upon thousands of years. It's not just some new Johnny come lately investment vehicle. It's been around since pretty much the dawn of time. Just to encourage you here this morning, I've got one of your Patreons listening into us this morning. So that's one good thing. He hasn't cancelled the subscription either. That's Robert Kyle in the live chat. He says, I'm in Mike's Patreon. Double thumbs up. Yes, and we hope you stay there, Robin. We hope you don't cancel that after this conversation with Mike this morning. I'll read you another comment out here, Mike. This is very organic and free-flowing this morning. Lord Melbury says, the problem with buying gold is the government knows who you are and where you live. America confiscated gold in 1934. Is that, and I'm just addressing the chat as it pops up here, is that a cause for concern? Can that be circumnavigated? Should that put you off investing in gold?
Yeah, well, the reason the US tried to take the gold is because they were bankrupt. So they tried to raid their citizens' wealth. Now, if they do that today, which they will, you know, I said it's like a drowning man. A drowning man will try and take down anything that gets within its vicinity. That's how it happens. And what they'll do today is they'll come for the assets that are easy to get, the lowest hanging fruit. So that's your financialized assets. That's your pension portfolios, your stock portfolios. That's already actually legally available to be taken. And it's being used right now as collateral by the banks. So if you think your pension's going to be there, if you think your stocks and shares and bonds, sorry to tell you, it's legally already gone. That's actually why people have gold, because it has no counterparty. So the only way you're going to get gold is if people voluntarily give it up, like the 1933 confiscation. People could have volunteered their gold. But guess what, Rick? Most people didn't. The numbers they give, they say, oh, it was 80% successful. No, there was people trading gold from 1933 all the way to 1971, which is when they reneged on that order. Because there was ways around it. It was a legal order. So what people did, for example, was they melted down their gold and reformed it into coins that had a religious symbol. Oh, it's not bullion anymore, Rick. It's illegal. It doesn't fit into the legal definition of the confiscation order. Now it's a religious token. Or they reformed it into jewelry. They did this in India. They tried to confiscate the gold in 1967. And what the Indians did was say, oh, great, we'll just melt it down and create bracelets. Now, guess who are the biggest holders of gold jewelry on planet Earth now? It's the Indians and the Asian countries, because, again, they learned from their history. So don't expect to get out of this unscathed. They will try and take things from people as the system comes down. And you have to be one step ahead. But the last thing you want to do, Rick, is just say, oh, I can't do anything about this. I'm going to allow myself to be impoverished. Bad idea. Bad idea.
Yeah. And just to address that comment as well, in all seriousness, about confiscating gold. So let's say you buy from Bullion by Post and there's a record, Mike, your address is on there, how much gold you bought, your current location over in Poland. And you do get a knock on the door from the authorities and they say, we've come here to confiscate your gold. Call me old fashioned, but I can remember reading a book in primary school. It was called Treasure Island, where an old pirate called Long John Silver took his gold and he buried it it. And what did he have but a map, a treasure map, so only he could go and find where that gold was buried. So I'm not being flippant here, but you know, you got to adopt a little bit of Long John Silver mentality here as well. You don't just leave it sitting on the sideboard, or you don't just leave it in the floor safe that you've drilled out in your bedroom floor. I think it's a fair statement to say that, I lost it. I was robbed. It's not here anymore. How are they going to find it without your treasure map? You know, a little bit of sidestepping can get around that problem pretty quickly, Mike, can't it?
Yeah, you can take it, Rick, for the simple fact that it's owned by everyone and anyone, and all of the wealthiest families on Earth transmit their wealth from generation to generation with it. So you've got, for example, private holdings in Germany of 8,000 tons. That's more than the Americans claim to have. You've got private holdings in China and tens of thousands of tons. India, you're talking about 50,000 tons. So what are they going to do? Just take it off everyone? No, what they'll try and do is intimidate and bully, the same way they did with some injections not so long back. And many people will fall for it. Many people will say, oh, I can't handle the psychological pressure of now becoming a supposed outlaw or having people say things about me, because there may be propaganda. So it's always up to the individual, Rick. But if you earn your money honestly and you're protecting yourself from what you foresee as some financial black swan event, you've got every right to do that. So I would just say, think ahead, be smart, and also, you know, just recognize that history is this one long continuum, and you have periods where maybe you can't have it out in the open, maybe you can't transfer it. For example, the 1700s, we had the French Revolution. During that time, they said, if you even mention gold in a shop, you will be put to the guillotine, because people were told you had to use the paper money. You aren't allowed to save yourself with gold. You have to use the paper. So people would go underground with it and not use it. But then guess what? A new system arose. The people who fall for it with the old system and handed it over, they were wiped out. The people who didn't, they continued. They were not impoverished. And I would say at this point in history, the last thing you want to do is become impoverished, because then you're going to be stuck dependent on those people who have done all of this that we've seen the last few years. And I think that, to me, is the nightmare scenario. So protect your wealth in whatever way you can, and just be smart about it. That's the way I do it.
One last thing, just because we're nearly up to time in this one already, and it's nice to keep the conversation on this one topic. Normally we dance around this various topics, which I love doing. We talk about boxing, we talk about politics, we talk about gold, we talk about investments, but we're really focusing in on the gold today. That wasn't by design on my part, but it's, I know, something that you're very passionate about, and it's something that's very relevant given the state of play with the prices at the minute. Just very briefly, in the last 2 years, we've seen this constant uptick in the price of gold. It fluctuates a little bit, but it's on the upward trajectory. Is it safe to say that we had the Ukraine-Russia conflict in 2022, then as it fizzled a little bit, then 6 months ago, then we had the business going on in the Middle East between Israel and Palestine. Now it looks like Iran is on the verge of wading in, which could further ripple the war effects right across the world. Is it fair to say that with all of these events, catastrophic and bad as they are, that has a positive effect on the price of gold?
Yeah, the reason people go to gold during these times, Rick, is because they understand that financialized assets are all promises. The promises to pay the counterparties. So your investments in the stock market, you're being promised to be paid out those things, but you've got many counterparties. Your bank deposits, the bank promises to pay you back. Your pension, you are being promised a pension. Gold is not a promise, it's a literal physical asset. You know, since the year 2000, the stock market has been dying, the financialized assets are dying, and the currencies are devaluing. So you've got gold up 800% in the dollar, 1,100% in the British pound in 24 years, but it's up over 100% in the last five. In the Japanese yen, 1,300%, but again, is up 100% since the year 2022. These are currencies dying. So people are going to these assets now, particularly big families and wealthy investors, because they see what's happening and they're getting very worried that the promises they've been made by this financial system to support them in old age and whatnot, it's not going to happen. And I don't think it is either. So I think all of these events are tipping people more towards that security asset, which is gold.
Yeah, and just to wrap this up, you and I have been talking now for what, 2 years, just over 2 years here on Locked and Loaded. We've been pretty consistent in our advice and the message that we're giving people, which is for their consideration, don't take Mike at face value. Don't take me at face value. Go and do your own research based on what he said or I've said and either discard it or accept it or maybe a little bit of both here. But I think it's fair to say, Mike, that, you know, people are saying, well, you've been talking about collapse now for years and you've been talking about that it hasn't happened yet. It doesn't happen until it happens, okay? So all of a sudden, these are things that are factors going on in the background that contribute to collapse. And then when it happens, it maybe does happen overnight, but it's based on factors that have been building up for a long period of time. And the factors that we're talking about here, the increased wars, the increased political instability across the world, money printing, inflation, hyperinflation, stagflation, these are all things that have been getting worse and worse over the last 2 years as well. And eventually, the piper will have to be paid with the collapse of the fiat monetary system. So be warned, do your own research and take steps according to mitigate that. Mike, we're out of time. I just want to direct people your way, trying to undo some of the damage from your last appearance here on Locked and Loaded. But yeah, check him out at Parallel, P-A-R-A-L-L-E-L _ Mike on X or Twitter, and also the website parallelmike.com. Go and support him there. He's got a fantastic Patreon page. He does a lot of very in-depth analyses of various events that are going on around the world, and he's doing it independently. So go on there and show him some love as he
thanks so much, Rick. I'll see you again
in Poland. Yeah, pleasure. So that's Parallel Mike. I'm Rick Munn. TNT James Freeman's on his way, and I'll be back again tomorrow morning, hopefully 11 a.m. to finish off the week. Stay tuned for more here on Today's News Talk.